Welcome to the Shortwave Report. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. This Shortwave Report is a 30-minute review of news and opinion heard on the shortwave radio and the internet in Northern California. Listening to international broadcasts at home is quite easy. You just need a shortwave radio with a schedule of English language broadcast, or a computer or a smartphone with an internet connection. To help you with this, I'll announce times, frequencies, and website addresses at the conclusion of each series of stories. The website for this show, that's outfarpress.com. You can listen to the past 5 shortwave reports, find advice for listening to shortwave at home, and find internet links for global news sources. Please check it out and tell a friend. In today's edition, you'll hear reports from NHK Japan, Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, Radio Havana Cuba, and Spanish National Radio. We will begin with NHK World Radio Japan. The Communist Chinese Party marked their 100th anniversary of its founding this week, at a time when it is tightening restrictions in Hong Kong. Chinese President Xi and Vladimir Putin have been meeting on an online summit, criticizing other countries for interfering with their internal affairs and unilateral sanctions. Parades, cannons, and speeches exalted the Communist Party for improving the welfare of the people with the promise of a modern socialist nation. Japan is donating $7 million to help Palestinians get COVID vaccines. The owner of the 7-Eleven convenience stores in Japan has signed a contract to power all their stores on solar energy. Major Japanese companies are asking their suppliers to cut in half their carbon footprints by 2030, in line with a global initiative called Science-Based Targets. Britain announced it will end coal-fired power generation in 2024. NHK Japan.
This week, the Chinese Communist Party will mark the 100th anniversary of its founding. At the same time, its leadership is looking to tighten restrictions in Hong Kong on freedom of speech and political activity, transforming a region once known for its freewheeling attitude. The security law, which came into effect a year ago this Wednesday, targets what Beijing defines as secessionism, subversion, acts of terrorism, and collusion with foreign forces. Hong Kong police say 114 people have been arrested on suspicion of violating the law in the past year. Recently, the police made headlines after arresting the founder and executives of the pro-democracy Apple Daily newspaper. The newspaper was critical of Beijing. It was forced to shut down last week after its assets were frozen. Supporters of the paper rallied behind it.
A society should have a variety of voices. We can't eliminate those voices.
But the clampdown does appear to be having an effect on the citizenry. Police say they have received more than 100,000 tip-offs since they launched a hotline in November, inviting people to report any violations of the law they might observe. Anyone deemed lacking sufficient loyalty to Beijing now cannot run for public office. Members of district council will likely be required to pledge allegiance to the Chinese and Hong Kong governments in July. That could see more than 100 pro-democracy councillors disqualified. Meanwhile, Xi and Russian President Vladimir Putin are celebrating the ties between their nations while criticizing others. The two leaders say some countries use democracy and human rights to interfere in internal affairs. China says the two also expressed their opposition to unilateral sanctions at an online summit. This comes after the group of seven leaders issued a joint communique underscoring the importance of peace and stability across the Taiwan Strait. It also calls on China to respect human rights and fundamental freedoms in the Xinjiang Uyghur Autonomous Region and Hong Kong. The Chinese and Russian governments say their leaders formally agreed to extend a friendship and cooperation treaty signed 2 decades ago. Putin reportedly stressed that coordination between their countries has a stabilizing role amid increasing geopolitical turbulence. Xi apparently hopes to strengthen relations with Russia as U.S. President Joe Biden's administration steps up cooperation with allies.
In China,
where the Communist Party is celebrating its centennial with a highly choreographed spectacle designed to highlight the party's role in the country's progress. President Xi Jinping gave a keynote speech Thursday, lauding the party's achievements. A 100-cannon salute kicked things off at Tiananmen Square in Beijing. Xi watched the military march at the venue. Xi took to the podium to stress the party's success in uniting the country. He added the nation's rejuvenation couldn't have happened without the Communist Party's presence.
The Chinese Communist Party has achieved the goal we've had for 100 years. We have built a moderately prosperous society. This means that we have brought about a historic resolution to the problem of absolute poverty in China.
Xi also looked ahead to the future. He said the party will build what they call a powerful socialist modern nation in the years ahead, and vowed that no external pressure would take China down. But the world's second largest economy is facing a range of challenges domestically. Among them, a rapidly aging population and a widening gap between the rich and poor. Beijing is also facing international criticism on its authoritarian approach to diplomacy and for human rights issues in the Xinjiang Uyghur Autonomous Region. China's muscular attitude towards Hong Kong and Taiwan has also sparked global censor. Japan is donating more than $7 million in financial aid to Palestinians to help with their coronavirus vaccination drive. The Japan International Cooperation Agency, or JICA, and the Palestinian Authority signed the deal on Wednesday. The aid will be used to purchase vaccine-related equipment, including refrigerated vehicles and portable freezers.
The owner of 7-Eleven convenience stores is teaming up with Japan's largest telecom provider for a long-term supply of solar power. The partnership between 7&I Holdings and Nippon Telegraph and Telephone comes as industry work toward the goal of carbon neutrality. 7&I Holdings has signed a 20-year contract to receive electricity from a solar plant developed by the NTT Group exclusively for the convenience store chain. NTT is already supplying power to 40 stores in the Greater Tokyo area. 7&I plans similar project for stores in other areas as well. NTT aims to recover the development cost through its sales of power to the retail giant. It could be a model for other companies as they seek ways to achieve a carbon-neutral society. Major Japanese companies are increasingly asking their smaller business partners to reduce their carbon footprints in a bid to curb emissions throughout supply chains. Precision instrument maker Seiko Epson is teaming up with 1,700 suppliers to meet a target of halving emissions collectively by 2030 compared to 2017 levels. The company found that nearly 90% of emissions generated through its manufacturing process come from parts suppliers and others outside its own plants. It plans to spend about $900 million on reducing overall emissions. Sekisui House has joined an international initiative known as Science-Based Targets that uses the latest climate science to show businesses how to cut emissions. The home builder is asking roughly 400 business partners to sign up too. The auto industry is also pitching in. Toyota Motor has asked more than 300 parts makers and other suppliers to meet concrete numerical goals for curbing their CO2 emissions.
Britain has announced it'll end coal-fired electric power generation in 2024, a year earlier than previously planned. The government said on Wednesday the decision was part of its commitment to transition away from fossil fuels and decarbonize power generation. Coal-fired power accounted for under 2% of Britain's electricity mix in 2020. That compares with 40% in 2012. Renewables such as wind power provided more than 40% last year. Energy and Climate Change Minister Anne-Marie Trevelyan said coal had powered the Industrial Revolution 200 years ago, but it's now time to eliminate dirty fuel from the energy system. Britain is set to host the COP26 climate conference in November. It appears to be looking to set ambitious targets and showcase its efforts to cut greenhouse gases before then.
Those reports were from NHK World Radio Japan. They are now heard from 9:30 to 10 p.m. at 7245 and 7355 or on the web at www.3.nhk.or.jp. All the times I announce are for Pacific Daylight Saving Time, so please adjust them to your time zone. Next, Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle. Many people in the island nation of Madagascar are facing famine, which they have done little to cause. A Canadian climatologist discusses the cause of the current heat wave in northwestern North America. Is it caused by climate change or intensified by it? What is the new normal in the climate? Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle.
The island nation of Madagascar is paying a high price for climate change, which it has done little to cause. The worst droughts in 40 years have left thousands in the Indian Ocean state on the brink of starvation. Aid organizations say more has to be done to prevent a humanitarian disaster from becoming even worse.
This was once fertile farmland, but now it's a desert. Years of drought have destroyed nearly all of the crops here. Strong winds sweeping away the soil, and then sandstorms covering what's left. Entire communities are on the brink of starvation. People here have resorted to eating whatever they can find.
In the morning, I prepare this plate of insects. I clean them the best I can without any water. For 8 months, my children and I have been eating this plant every day. We have nothing else to eat and no rain to grow crops.
People here are on the front line of a global climate crisis. Madagascar hardly emits any greenhouse gases, but it's one of the worst victims of climate change.
We're facing the worst drought in over 40 years. And this is an area where people depend on their own agriculture, homegrown school meals, smallholder farmers. This is how they live down here. But with drought back to back to back, people can't survive.
The cycle of drought is tearing families apart. These two boys orphaned after their mother died of hunger. They've been taken in by another family, but severely malnourished, they're still not getting enough to eat.
We have nothing left. Their mother is dead, and my husband is dead. What do you want me to say? Our life centers around looking for cactus leaves to survive.
Nearly a million people in southern Madagascar depend on food aid. Some people here walked for hours to get help. But not everyone is healthy enough to make the long journey. Aid organizations are urging that more be done to help Madagascar. Food to feed the hungry mouths. And finally, action on climate change.
I'm joined by David Phillips. He is a climatologist. He joins me tonight from Toronto, the cool side of Canada. When you look at these high temperatures in the western parts of Canada and the United States, tell me, how much of this is extreme weather and how much of this is climate change?
Anytime you get a monster hurricane, a super typhoon, a heat wave, a forest fire, people always say, is this coming out of our tailpipes and smokestacks? We know that climate change doesn't create heat waves or hurricanes or major storms, but it contributes to it. You know, these heat waves are like our grandparents' heat waves. They've occurred before. But what's different about them, Brett, is the intensity of them, the statistics of them, the character, personality, the nature of these heat waves. They're not all the same. This one is much earlier than we've ever seen before. We're seeing the areas sprawling from the Arctic Circle right down to the desert southwest, and no escaping it. And with record-breaking them, we just broke a record that stood for 84 years.
Yeah.
And so I think that what climate change does is it sort of ramps it up. It's sort of like the steroids for weather. And so therefore it makes systems bigger and badder and more impactful. And so I think the degrees or elements of this heat wave are clearly has human DNA, but it's not the total cause.
But as we move forward, if we look into the future, should we be calculating more heat waves like this to be a part of the weather? And should we be talking about a new normal when we talk about normal weather?
Well, clearly, Brett, I mean, there's no question about it. We what you see is what you're going to get. It's a forecast for the future. And likely we will see breaking records. I mean, this record stand for one or two more days, or else maybe 2 years, not 84 years. And so my sense is that clearly get used to it. This is the new norm. This is the kind of weather event that we'll see more often, especially in a country like Canada. I mean, we're the second coldest country in the world. Right. We're the snowiest country in the world. The lesson is here. More of them, stronger, more intense. Hey, that is the forecast going ahead. This is a lesson to learn. This is not something that is just a one-off. It's going to be something that's going to be very much part of the new climate here in Canada.
Mr. David Phillips, Senior Climatologist for Environment and Climate Change.
Those reports were from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, which may be heard at a combined audio-video website, dw.com. On to Radio Havana, Cuba. At the White House, dozens of nonviolent youth were arrested while demanding meaningful action on the climate crisis. In Minnesota, sheriffs blocked access to the encampment of indigenous-led water protectors. The World Health Organization has urged that even fully vaccinated people should continue wearing masks in light of the COVID Delta variant. Going Underground producer Afshin Ratansi and numerous others in London are in isolation following positive tests. The Cuban foreign minister condemned this week's U.S. bombings in Syria and Iraq. Then a viewpoint on the presidential election in Peru. Radio Havana, Cuba.
In the U.S. Capitol, Secret Service agents have made dozens of arrests as hundreds of youth climate activists surrounded the White House in a non-violent blockade demanding President Biden take meaningful action on the climate crisis. Members of the Sunrise Movement are calling on Biden and congressional Democrats to pass an infrastructure bill that includes major investments in green energy, including a fully funded civilian climate corps. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, New York Democratic Congress member, joined the protests. She said there was no time to waste in preventing a climate catastrophe. Quote, "What a lot of folks here in D.C. don't understand is while this may be the hottest summer of their lives, it's going to be one of the coldest summers for our lives. And so what that means is that they brought this heat on us, so we will bring the heat on them." In the state of Minnesota, Hubbard County's sheriff deputies have barricaded access to an encampment of water protectors who are resisting construction of the Enbridge Line 3 tar sands pipeline, which has the backing of the Biden administration. Officers towed away several of the activists' cars and made a number of arrests throughout the day. An attorney for the indigenous-led protesters called the move, quote, "nothing less than an overt political blockade." As more outbreaks linked to the Delta COVID-19 variant spread around the world, the World Health Organization, or WHO, is urging that even fully vaccinated people continue wearing masks, maintain social distancing, and take other precautions. Tedros Adhanom, the WHO Director General, said, "Delta is the most transmissible of the variants identified so far. It has been located in at least 85 countries and is spreading rapidly amongst unvaccinated populations. About half of those infected in a recent outbreak linked to the Delta variant were fully vaccinated, and Israel has reimposed an indoor mask mandate and other measures amid the rise in new cases. Meanwhile, India is reporting mounting cases of a related variant which has been dubbed Delta Plus. And in Bangladesh, tens of thousands of migrant workers left the capital, Dhaka, ahead of strict stay-at-home orders going into effect this week.
Foreign Minister Bruno Rodriguez Parrilla condemned the U.S. airstrikes President Joe Biden ordered Monday along Iraq's Syria border. In a tweet, Rodriguez wrote, "Cuba firmly rejects the U.S. airstrikes against Syrian and Iraqi territories, which constitute a flagrant violation of international law and the United Nations Charter." According to press reports, the airstrikes left at least 11 people dead, including civilians. The governments of both countries condemned the attacks, and it is the second time Biden has ordered airstrikes in the region. The actions came less than 2 weeks after the U.S. House of Representatives voted to repeal the 2002 authorization for use of military force, which grants sweeping war powers to the President of the United States.
Yesterday marked 3 weeks into the second round of the presidential elections in Peru without a winner being proclaimed, during which the very worst of electoral democracies is gradually but relentlessly coming to light. The right wing in Lima, where financial, media, and until now political power is concentrated, is taking all possible measures to prevent Professor Pedro Castillo, who won the election by more than 40,000 votes ahead of Keiko Fujimori, from being declared the next head of state. Like a kind of Andean Trump, the daughter of the former dictator, Alberto Fujimori, has tried every desperate attempt, including baseless claims of fraud, to snatch the victory from Castillo. Once this ruse was exhausted, she is now simply asking for the votes that she evidently lost to be annulled. The fact is that international observers, including the unreliable Organization of American States, the OAS, describe the electoral process as correct, but the challenges continue and authorities are abiding by them. The long wait, as well as recent evidence released in the country, throws into question the impartiality of the National Electoral Council. Indeed, recordings of calls made from prison by Vladimiro Montesinos, the macabre intelligence chief during Alberto Fujimori's administration, have come to light, urging to bribe three electoral officials. It is powerfully striking that one of the National Electoral Council officials, Luis Arce, surprisingly resigned, thus paralyzing the entity's activities for a few days until a replacement was appointed last Saturday. After triggering the scandal, Keiko Fujimori tried to put distance between her and Montesinos, but is using all possible tricks to avoid conceding defeat. If she fails to win the presidency, she will have to be tried for money laundering that could send her to prison for up to 30 years. In the meantime, Castillo has grown in popularity inside and outside of Peru. A recent poll indicates that the professor from Cajamarca has 45% approval in the country compared to 30% for his rival, a much larger difference than what the poll showed 3 weeks ago. No one doubts that a resolution is urgently needed. In a fragmented Peru that needs a new course, different from the paper democracy that has been imposed on it for decades and whose end is in sight.
Those reports were from Radio Havana, Cuba. Cuba's website is working well at radiohc.cu, but the podcasts are no longer updated. On shortwave, Cuba may be heard from noon to 1 p.m. at 15140 and from 6 p.m. to midnight at either 6000, 6060, or 6100. If you have questions or comments about the shortwave report or could assist me by supporting this listener-funded program, I may be reached through the website and PayPal, or by writing to Dan Roberts at P.O. Box 1162, Willits, California, 95490. Please help me keep producing this freely distributed weekly radio show. We will conclude with Radio Exterior de España, or Spanish National Radio. Justin Coe reports on Spanish President Sanchez releasing 9 Catalan leaders who were imprisoned for involvement in a separatist referendum in 2017. Spanish National Radio.
Spain has pardoned all 9 separatist leaders jailed for their role in Catalonia's failed 2019 independence bid. Speaking in a televised address on Tuesday, Spanish Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez said, "On this day, we look toward the future with greater optimism. Today, with this act, we want to open a new phase of dialogue, of reconciliation, and to put an end, once and for all, to all the divisions and confrontation." The Spanish government hopes the gesture of the pardons will foster a dialogue to keep the region part of Spain, deflating its push for self-determination. The politicians and activists were sentenced in 2019 to between 9 and 13 years for sedition and misuse of public funds, after a referendum on a breakaway that courts banned, but which led to a short-lived declaration of independence, triggering Spain's worst political crisis in decades. In his address, Mr. Sanchez said that the measure did not require that those who were pardoned must change their ideas. This was not expected, he said, adding that, in fact, those who were sent to prison were not sent there for their ideas, but for their actions against democratically established laws. Mr. Sanchez said that a strong democracy like Spain's did not ask anyone to renounce their ideas, but did require that all ideas were debated within the framework of the law and with respect for the rights of all Spaniards. Catalonia's pro-independence regional chief minister, Pere Aragonès, said the pardons were a first step on what he called the path of negotiation and agreement, while reaffirming his view that Madrid should allow an internationally recognized referendum. Shortly after, the central government reiterated its opposition to any such vote. The pardons are conditional, it said, and a ban on the leaders holding public office remains in place. On Wednesday, a day after the pardons were announced, the 9 separatist leaders left prison. They were defiant and vowed to keep fighting for an independent Catalonia. The released politicians and activists, who carried a banner demanding freedom for Catalonia, were greeted by Mr. Aragonès amid cheers and clapping from supporters. Jordi Cuixart, one of the pardoned separatists and head of Catalan cultural association Òmnium, told reporters outside the Lledoners prison, an hour north of Barcelona, that there was no pardon that would silence the Catalan people. Josep Rull, a former Catalan government official, said, "We will achieve Catalonia's independence, and we will win." Meanwhile, conservative opposition parties in Spain have renewed their calls for Mr. Sanchez to resign as prime minister over the pardons, arguing that the move undermines Spain's unity. Opinion polls show just about half of Catalonia's population favors splitting from Spain. Catalan separatists are also seeking a broad amnesty for all those with outstanding legal cases related to the 2017 referendum and independence bid. The Spanish government has ruled out a blanket amnesty, which would benefit around 3,000 people, including politicians who fled Spain, such as former Catalan regional chief minister Carles Puigdemont. The Spanish government's regional policy minister, Miquel Iceta, said, "There won't be amnesty, there won't be self-rule. What there will be is dialogue and politics." Meanwhile, it has been announced that Mr. Sanchez will meet with Mr. Aragonès in Madrid on June 29th, 1 week after the government's pardons.
That report by Justin Coe was from Radio Exterior de España, or Spanish National Radio. Spain may be heard at their website rtve.es and by podcast as REE. On shortwave, they broadcast from 5 to 7 p.m. Pacific Daylight Saving Time at 17855 and 11940, although I cannot pick up their signal. One of my goals in producing this show is to encourage people like you to listen to international broadcast, get a global perspective. Every Thursday evening, I post a new shortwave report at the website for this show. That's outfarpress.com. At my website, you can also listen to past shows. Please take a moment and make a safe donation online through PayPal. There's a link at my website along with the podcast link, and get advice for listening at home. The Shortwave Report, which is now in its 25th year of production, remains free to rebroadcast upon notification. The Shortwave Report is produced and distributed off the electrical grid in Northern California using solar panels. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. Thanks for listening.